You're listening to the Cynic Radio Podcast. Now, your hosts, Igri and Cynic.
And you are listening to the one, the only, the Cynic Radio Podcast. And I am your host, Cynic. And joining me, as always, my co-hosts. And for some reason this week, they showed up dressed like the Batabi brothers from Night at the Roxbury, Igri and Ryan. This week's show? Well, we discuss the state of the Geek Culture Union. We talk about what's going on in the world of The Walking Dead, which movie trailers blew us away during the Super Bowl, and is Rotten Tomatoes biased? Because we are the Cynic Radio Podcast, and we'd like to thank you for your continued support of our show. So like, listen, subscribe. Most importantly, enjoy this nonsense. Since we last left you guys, some stranger things have been going on in the world of pop culture and in the news. We're going to jump around a little bit, so try to keep up with us. Firstly, let's hit the what's leaking out of the world of The Walking Dead. It's been a few months since we left our friends in Alexandria. Carl was apparently bitten, and our heroes were on the run. IG, in retrospect, how do you feel about the decision made with Carl?
I'm not all that happy with it. I saw Carl as kind of the future. I guess, you know, I thought Rick would die before Carl. I mean, especially with as much as Rick has gone through, losing your son now, that's just, it's just a kick in the teeth that I don't think was necessary from the show. Now, it might be pushed from Chandler Riggs' side, although the news that came out seems like it's not. It still may have been, and he's just trying to keep the fans interested in him. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of it, and I don't think that Carl has gone that way in the comics as well. So it, I know it, they are trying to make their own thing, but I'm not a fan.
I haven't gone through all the comics, so I don't know where, you know, how far along his storyline goes in the comics. So, and he's never been my favorite character. So I think while he's grown on me over the last couple of, I'd say the last season and a half or so, I think he's definitely grown on me. Like if this would have happened 2 years ago, I would have been perfectly fine. I think that, you know, just when you get to the point where he's becoming a strong character to off him kind of sucks. But it really depends on where they go with the story, which, you know, given their track record of being very hit or miss recently, I mean, it could work out well or it could be a disaster. So, you know, I'm not sure really what to think. My opinion's kind of mixed on it.
And not only that, I mean, not only has the writing gotten better for him, but I believe Chandler's acting skills have gotten better. And I think he's bringing a little bit more to the role. And it's sad to see him go when I think he's finally starting to build momentum. I mean, they were writing in a love interest for him. The character was getting deeper, and then all of a sudden it was a screeching halt. Hypothetically, or speaking with no knowledge of the situation, I know his parents were heavily involved in his career, and I have a feeling that Daddy Riggs probably lost a pissing match with Scott Gimple, and this is the end result of it. After putting 7 years into the role, probably wanted to be paid top tier, and unfortunately he's not a top tier actor, and this being TV, there's not an unlimited budget. I mean, Ryan, in retrospect, do you feel when they break away from source material like this, do you think it helps or hurts the show?
It really depends. It's weird because I think, you know, I'm comparing it to like Game of Thrones, where if you deviate too far from the source material, it's problematic because you kind of have, you know, there's certain story beats you have to hit. I don't know that it's as important with The Walking Dead, but that could just be that I'm not a huge fan of the source material. So, you know, or that I haven't gone through it a million times. And so, you know, I'd like to say, yeah, you know, I'd like to say, you know, if it's good, if it makes for a good story and it makes for good TV and there's like a long-term plan, sure, it's great. But that's also kind of not respecting the fact that there is source material to draw from. And if he's a central and integral part of that, which it appears he is, then, I don't know that it does that material justice. So, yeah, I'm kind of mixed on it. But, you know, I'd say overall it's probably a bad thing, but I don't know.
The thing that you got going on here is when you start departing from the source material so much, you end up with what we got with the first half of this season, which is 8 episodes that should have been 1, right? They're trying to stretch too much to get content, and it showed in the first half of the season because probably since season 2, this is the weakest half a season they've had. Season 2 had some weak spots in it, but this has been pretty poorly done because they took stuff that should have been 1, maybe 2 episodes and made it 8. And that's purely because they were planning to jump off the source material in a hard way, at least as far as I can see.
Well, and what hurts is that there was such a big buildup for this season. We left on such a high note going out of last season, and coming into this, you know, the possibilities were endless. It was finally time to see Rick kind of push back, and the good guys were going to win one, and they really haven't. But
from a purist standpoint, IG, and I know that the majority of the fan base is people who found it through TV and not comic book fans. You probably gained more TV fans that switched to the comic book than the other way around. Do you chance driving off the purists that did start watching the show because they were comic book fans beforehand?
Well, I think what's kept a lot of this strong is that the fact is they were staying close to comic material. Obviously, it was never completely comic material because I'm right. There was no Dwight, right? No, not Dwight. No Daryl.
No Daryl.
So they put something in there just to draw fans, and it's worked, right? Daryl draws fans like nobody else. But you're threatening the whole community when you start taking the story in such a direction that it's hard to keep a fluent story going. And that's the problem, is that story's becoming just, you know, segmented, and there's too many things going on and none of them keep track of each other. And it's like they don't know where this is all going to lead. And maybe it's some convoluted thing that Gimple's got going on. That could very well be. But it's hard for even a casual viewer to see, and a hardcore viewer is just sitting here getting frustrated. It could go any number of directions, and I have faith that the show will bring us back in, and hopefully they resolve some of the mistakes, and some of it could just be fixed in simple editing and trying to get things done in the second half of the season. I'm hopeful because I really do love The Walking Dead, and I think they could do a lot of great things.
Let me ask you both this then, because the fandom and Facebook has been trying to reinvent the wheel and figure out new ways to save this kid. If they pull some sort of JR shows up in the shower type thing, or if they pull some sort of shenanigans and Carl just is fine after all this, is this the end of the show? I mean, is that their jump the shark moment?
Oh, there's no way. If he lives, if Carl lives through this, I might be done with it. That's bullshit. He can't live through that. There's no way.
Unless they have some insanely clever way to tell that story, which I seriously doubt, unless there's something that it's been set up since the first episode of this season. And when you realize that, you're just in awe of how they pulled one over on you. Yeah, I wouldn't be happy with it. You know, it wouldn't be right. You know, they sold it and that's it. So, you know, it's just got to live with the choice and move on. You know, it sucks, but hopefully they're able, you know, I think they might've jumped the shark anyway, killing him off. We'll see where the show goes. I think the show is wildly inconsistent, and when it's on, it's one of the best shows on TV. And when it's off, it's just frustrating because you know how good it can be. So, you know, I do think if they bring him back, if he finds a way to survive, it's problematic, to say the least. So I hope that they kill him off for good.
It appears that this was completely a salary decision, more even though they tell you it's a story decision. And Chandler Riggs isn't the first person to be written off because of salary demands. I mean, of any show. But him being the future of the storyline, Ryan, if you were running the show, would you have given him top tier money to keep him?
Well, I think he deserves top tier money. He's been on the show from the beginning. He absolutely deserves it. He may not be the greatest actor in the world, but he's been there from the beginning. This show is one of the most popular shows on TV, so he absolutely deserves it. At the end of the day, like the problem becomes, if they killing him off means that they're going to veer significantly from the comic storylines. And so, do you have faith in the writers to basically take it on themselves and do their own thing? And obviously they can still adapt some of the material from the comics, but they really are on their own to develop characters and really write their way out of it. And so it's kind of a question of, do you have confidence in them to do that? And I, right now, I don't. But to answer the question, he absolutely deserves top tier money, whether or not, you know, they were going to kill him off for story reason or not.
Well, how about this? If you want to determine how much money he's going to make, base it off of Walker Stalker. All right. Pick any Walker Stalker convention that all of the stars go to. So Atlanta's a good choice. Judge Daryl Dixon, right? Judge his line as top dollar. Whatever percentage of fans you also get, that's the percentage of money you make. That would work, right?
there'd be a lot of people going home without any money. IG, they're kind of turning it a little bit and saying, well, maybe Enid will take over for Carl in the storyline and we'll push her as the new face of the show. Would you accept that? Is she a strong enough character and is she a good enough actress?
Well, I don't mind the actress and I don't even mind the character, but is she strong enough to carry this? Not a chance. I mean, she's not shown us enough to carry her own acting, much less the whole show, from at least the level that Carl was. Carl really turned into not all that charismatic, but kind of a badass. He was kind of fun to have around and see the kind of stupid decisions he'd make, you know, like unwilling to stay in the house, Carl. You know, Enid has always been doing whatever Enid wants to do, and it's just not all that interesting anymore. I mean, we got to get her doing something else to keep that relevant, and Carl could go any direction and it was more fun to watch.
So, you know, and I think another thing to consider is, you know, this is really an ensemble show. If you look at the characters they have currently, the characters that they've just gone through, it really is an ensemble show. So I don't think there's no one character that will carry the show. I think you can kill off anybody and the show can go on if the writing is strong enough. They, you know, just always have, you know, great actors. And so I think to be fair, like, I don't think Enid could carry the show. I think she's a perfectly decent actress, but her character, neither the actress or the character are strong enough to carry any show, but neither is like Chandler Riggs. He's a good actor and he has proven to be a badass, but he's not the type of actor that can carry a show, but it's not necessary. It's really, you know, comes down to, you know, the characters and what they do with them and who we want to follow as viewers and who we believe is really the leader. But yeah, at the end of the day, I don't think they need to rely on any one character to carry the show. They just have to stop making stupid decisions in the writer's room.
Speaking of salary demands, Lauren Cohen, who plays Maggie, has made waves about gender bias pay. She's looking to be paid on the same level as her male co-stars. If she doesn't get what she wants and word is out that she's looking at pilots for other shows and she might not be around for episode 9, how should the show handle her departure? I mean, we've already lost Carl. Could we stand to lose Maggie, or how would you handle her departure? I mean, do you think the fans would accept a recast?
Well, a recast is not going to work for Maggie. I'm sorry, but the only two words that make any sense in any of this are and that is pay her. She deserves every lick of the same amount of money that the top male stars are getting. She's a great actress and she has hammered that role. And that role is as impressive and as strong as any role in that show. She's as impressive and strong as Negan, as Rick, as Carl, as anybody you want to talk to. The only one I would put above her, and that's just because I love the acting, would be King Ezekiel. And that's just because I love how he does that. But that doesn't make him better. That's just fanboy in me. But she is top tier. She has shown to be top tier. And she hasn't been there as long as Carl, but only one season less, because she came in season 2. She deserves it. She is carrying a lot of weight on that show. And people are paying attention to her. She is one of the strongest female characters on TV today. And she deserves to be paid whatever, maybe even more than her male co-stars.
Yeah, I agree. There's no reason why she shouldn't be paid top tier. She's one of the most important characters on the show. Again, you know, I just said that no one character is more valuable than the show. But, you know, if you were to argue, you know, she's up there among the people who are valuable enough that the show would really, really suffer significantly without them. I think her death, if and when it happens, needs to be dramatic. It needs to have weight. It needs to have meaning, and it needs to drive the plot. So, you know, I really hope, you know, that if and when she does die, that it's not something that's due to salary demands, but it's because they've written it, you know, written it into a situation where the story, you know, it drives the story. That's where, you know, that's what her, you know, that's the value of her death. So I don't know that Carl's death has done that. Like, I don't know what the real, you know, significance of it is and how it drives the story. But again, when you have a major character like that, I just think that's how you have to handle it. But yeah, I think she should absolutely be paid as much as any of them. She's been there almost as long and is as valuable as anybody on the show.
You can't up the level of writing for the female characters, empower them on the show, and then not pay them. That's the epitome of being hypocritical. She is great for the part. I don't know if she's a great actress, but she's great for the part. You couldn't ask for a better job. She's very fan-friendly. She's very engaging. You've got to keep her around. Guys, is it safe to say that they've generated probably maybe of excess of $1 billion off this show between toys and Walker Stalker and advertisement? They've probably generated over the last almost 8 years, probably generated $1 billion. I mean, you can pay these people. You may not be able to pay the whole cast, you know, north of $100,000 per episode because it just wouldn't work, but you could pay these people. Ryan, looking at the sister show, Fear of the Walking Dead, they've had a few interesting new castmates that are going to show up in the upcoming season. Joining Lenny James will be the always amazing Garrett Dillahunt and Jenna Elfman. If you're unfamiliar with Garrett Dillahunt, he was great in Raising Hope. He's in No Country for Old Men, and he was fantastic, even though he was only in the first four or five episodes of Deadwood, but he was amazing at Deadwood. I know that you're not the biggest Fear of the Walking Dead, but the introduction of Morgan into the story, the new cast members, would it pique your interest enough to tune in?
It has. I'm considering giving it a shot. There's so many shows to catch up on and watch that, you know, it's not high on my list, but I will admit that, you know, the introduction of Morgan and some of the new cast announcements and the fact that I have heard good things about the most recent season, I think I will revisit it. A lot of it also just depends on how sour of a taste this season leaves. Like, you know, you guys know, anyone who's listened to the podcast knows I've not been too high on this half season. So I think that if this second half season ends strong, I think that would kind of reignite my, you know, passion or engagement for The Walking Dead and all the kind of ancillary materials, including Fear of the Walking Dead. So I think, you know, I have it on my list. It's on my radar. And I think if this half season is strong, which it has the potential to be, that would set it up for me to really have to sit down and go and watch it.
I mean, if you compare the two half seasons, Fear of the Walking Dead had a better season than the Walking Dead. It was a far better show. It was far more engaging. I think the biggest mistake they made with Fear of the Walking Dead is there's not very likable characters on there. They need to make a Glenn somewhere along the line. And I think that basing it in Mexico probably drove a lot of people off. Southern Texas, Mexico. I think if they would have stayed in and around the California area, now I know it would have been a lot more to actually film the show, but I think people would have been a hell of a lot more engaged if you were dealing with all the issues of a big city rather than, you know, some sort of Indian warrior tribe. I don't think that it was the right direction to go with the show, but it is solid. I do like the leads. I absolutely love Domingo Coleman. Kim is great. So I think you should give it a shot. IG, what do you think?
I love me some Lenny James. So it'll get a shot because I love me some Lenny James so much that, I mean, anytime Snatch is on, I watch it. I mean, yeah, that's as much Brad Pitt's part in that movie as it is Lenny James, but Lenny James has a big part in it. I'm going to give it a shot. I've not been big on it. I haven't watched the first half of this season, and I might go watch it in the next few days or something just to give myself something to get ready for the second half for. But Lenny James coming over is enough. That's enough to get me. And it's not to say anything bad about Domingo Coleman because he's amazing, and I've seen him in other things, and he's very good. The show itself has had me some weak spots for just the points you brought up. I mean, they're in the middle of nowhere. You know, at least these other places give hints and views of places that we might have some draw to. We might care about. I mean, it's happening in Georgia. We know Georgia. We've been to Georgia, as a matter of fact. So it really matters more on The Walking Dead as far as where they are. And they could solve that problem in Fear by getting back to somewhere familiar, because it is, although the shows, both of them, have gained an international audience, it is still the largest portion of a U.S. audience that is watching it. And they really need to kind of cater to the U.S. audience in that, aspect to make sure that we stay engaged. We're also the money spenders going out and buying all the merch, the t-shirts and the Lucille bats and everything else. But yeah, Lenny James being in it, I'm going to go at least watch for some of that. Now, if it ends up being bad, I can just tune back away from it, and that's fine. But I think I like Lenny James enough that I think he'll bring something special to Fear, and it'll be fun to watch.
Well, I am a straight up Lenny James mark. When I met Lenny and I got to have like a 5 or 10 minute conversation with him, every time I see that guy, I'm happy. I was in a different line and he was taking pictures and I just wanted to high five him or something. Lenny James is an awesome individual. I'm happy that they gave him this opportunity because I see him now as the lead of the show. However, I still think that the decision should have been made to include Abraham because he's not on the other show anymore. But who knows, you know, maybe it was salary demands or filming conflicts that it could have been him. A little bit of Abraham, maybe even some Eugene and Rosita, I think would have made more sense just due to the location and the timing. IG, it's being built as Worlds Collide. However, we're only seeing one single character go onto another show. Would you like to see a full crossover between The Walking Dead and Fear of the Walking Dead at some point?
Not necessarily full, but more than just Lenny. Like you said, if we could get like Eugene and Abraham and all of them in their little caravan of trying to move across the country because Eugene's apparently a doctor going to save everybody, I could buy into that. Seeing them all over in that show would work. You know, maybe a couple other characters that have moved around, even Negan kind of making a pass through because we don't know where he came from as far as geography. So it would work there. Like some of those things would be great and they could work. Everybody, no. I mean, I don't want to see Rick in there. I don't want to see Daryl in there. I don't want to see any of the season one or two cast members there. Like, I just don't. I don't think it'd work. I think it'd just, that would be just a money grab, a push for something that shouldn't be there. And that's just my personal opinion. If somebody else can find a way to poke a hole in that, feel free. But it just does not seem like it would work.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, if you want to get even one character here and there, it just feels like you really have to shoehorn people in, and a full crossover. It would take so much legwork and so much kind of shoehorning and twisting stories to make that work that I think it would detract from either show. So unless like you're folding one into the other, like unless, you know, the guys from Fear of the Walking Dead, you know, finally make it to Atlanta and they just become part of, you know, the Walking Dead show, I don't see how a full on crossover would work or make sense. And so I'd hope that they keep the cameos and, you know, minor crossovers to a minimum and let the shows kind of develop on their own. I think, you know, if you're going to add somebody like adding Lenny James, you know, hopefully it's adding them as a main cast member and not as like a, oh, hey, I just happened to run into you guys, you know, and then have a wink and a nod to the audience. It's not necessary. And, you know, generally it doesn't work well. So, you know, hopefully they stay away from that.
The only way I'd like to see a full crossover is if one of the shows was in trouble, you know, to save some of these characters that we've grown to love, to save Strand. If Fear of the Walking Dead was going to go off, for some reason it got canceled and they wanted to put him on The Walking Dead, I would fully accept that. But I think the shows are strong enough that they need to stay separate, at least for now. And if they're going to do it, I don't think it should be a permanent thing, but maybe like a very special after school special couple episodes and then they all go their own way. Because I'm still a fan of The Walking Dead and I want as much Walking Dead content as possible. Them combining the shows means that we're going to lose one of the shows and I really don't want that. If they can be equally as strong and they could survive, keep making Walking Dead shows. Hell, I'll watch Walking Dead Hackensack, New Jersey if they come out with it and it's a good enough show. We're going to take a look at the superhero landscape because it is vast. After a month of us being off, things have started to move. Things have started to happen. And we're on the precipice of a few huge movies coming out like Black Panther, Ant-Man and Wasp, Aquaman, Deadpool 2, Venom. Which one are you the most excited to see?
Black Panther, definitely.
Good answer, because that's what I was going to tell you to say. Yeah.
No, definitely most. I mean, I think I'm excited about all of them. I think, you know, almost every one of the trailers had something really interesting. But Black Panther just looks phenomenal. It's just, you know, the reviews obviously have been, you know, coming out so far are great. It looks amazing. It's got an incredible cast. I mean, just one of the best, you know, casts you can come up with. Ryan Coogler, you know, is directing. It just looks beautiful. Can't say enough. Like every time I see a trailer, it's even better. Or, you know, looks even better, gets me more excited. So, you know, my excitement is beyond what it should be. And I typically like to kind of keep my expectations tempered a little bit. But so far, it looks really good and easily the most anticipated movie, comic book movie of the year.
Yeah, for me, it's Aquaman. I'm just kidding. It's Black Panther.
You know, it's funny because that was like a tongue-in-cheek joke on the show Entourage. You know, Vince goes on to be Aquaman, and now we're going to have to deal with an Aquaman movie. And I love Jason Momoa, but I just don't have a lot of faith that this movie is going to succeed. IG, I'm going to appeal to the dad in you, because from the bowels of the internet, there's come a movement to sabotage Black Panther's Rotten Tomatoes score by a few scorned DC fans who think the site's biased and only shows Marvel love. By the way, I'm pretty sure Rotten Tomatoes, Warner Brothers has a controlling interest in Rotten Tomatoes. But does if you could sit these people down, IG, and speak to these misguided individuals, what would you say to them? Is it just a case of people having too much time on their hands?
Well, one, yes, it is. They've got way too much time on their hands if this is what bothers them. If it bothers them that Black Panther had an amazing rating on Rotten Tomatoes and that's what they needed to get it, dedicate their lives to, they need something else in their lives. This is absolutely ludicrous. So the dad in me is going to tell them, you know what? Your racism is peeking out here. You might want to put it away. What is wrong with having a predominantly black movie with an awesome black superhero that isn't portraying stereotypes? What we've got here is an actually strong leader of people who isn't smoking dope, isn't doing anything dumb that you know, if you look at, and not that I'm saying this is the community, but if you look at the standard black movies, they all tend to lead toward the same kind of stuff, that they all do certain stereotypes because that's what sells in that community. And this is going completely the other way and giving people something to rally behind that is just beautiful. And it's got the best actors and the best everybody, and it's 99% black people, which is wonderful. And it's beautiful to look at. And I'm in a mixed family here, and my children are going to go see this, and I want them to see it so that they have black people that they can look up to and that aren't, you know, talking about raping people or aren't talking about shooting cops. They're literally just trying to be as good as they can be. It's anybody that wants to push this down a peg for any reason that after I see this movie, if I see it and there's something in there that's just glaringly stupid, I'm going to call that out. But most of these people writing the reviews haven't even seen the movie yet. The people bringing it down pegs haven't even looked at more than a trailer. I'm not a big fan of what these people are doing. Give the movie a shot. And you know what? White, black, red, different. It doesn't matter if you're plaid colored. You're going to like Black Panther. It is going to be amazing. Everything looks good about it.
Ryan, do you think it is, you know, the sense or hint of racism? Or do you think it's just this epic battle between Marvel and DC that may, this rift may never be repaired?
I think both. You know, you know, unfortunately, I think you're going to get racism involved in many things in life. And we certainly haven't seen this type of action for any other Marvel movies. And there, you know, been quite a few over the last few years. So it's a little strange that all of a sudden, you know, a very highly anticipated, highly regarded, highly rated movie, you know, Marvel movie that happens. So I do think there is a segment of the kind of that population that is racist. And so I think there definitely a lot of it is just really just fanboys who are butthurt about, you know, DC movies not being that great, you know, and they're taking it out. But I do think there certainly would be, you know, be a hint to that because that's just there. It's a lot of it is just, you know, the silly DC versus Marvel thing. And at the end of the day, Marvel is getting it right and DC needs to figure themselves out. So it's like, you know, yeah, you can be I'm a DC quote fanboy, but I'm can acknowledge that thus far, you know, what's been put out has been, you know, mostly mediocre, you know, with a little, you know, some hints of, you know, something good. And so, you know, why don't you, you know, put pressure on DC to make better movies than trying to bring down the scores of you know, Marvel movies. But like that's par for the course, unfortunately, with the internet today. So it's not something I was shocked to hear.
Yeah, it seems like the bigger you get, the more people want to see you fail. But they're getting it right. Let's face it, Black Panther is like a third-rate character in the Marvel universe. And they made a first-rate movie. They casted well. They had a great introduction. And I look for him to lead the MCU going forward after these Infinity War movies. I think he's going to be as out front as any other character. And people are going to have to deal with that. Regardless of how you feel about where he comes from or what the storyline is, there's a pretty good chance that Chadwick Boseman is going to be the face of the Marvel MCU going forward. My problem with the DC fans are that be mad at Warner Brothers because they're the ones dropping the ball. Every time I hear the plan for a Warner Brothers movie, it changes 5-6 times. And then they're like, well, it may not be happening in this timeline. None of this helps the story going forward. If you're not going to connect these movies, if you're not going to make a coherent storyline like Marvel has, your chances of, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is Batman in this timeline, but then Ben Affleck is Batman in that timeline. That doesn't make any sense. You can't produce these movies like a TV show. It's one every couple of years. How about you get yourself together and we sign some actors up that want to be the characters, regardless of how big of stars they are, and we go forward from then, and we stop changing in and out Jokers depending on what day of the week it is, because that annoys me.
Well, that's a larger argument or issue, because I do think that DC might benefit from just making, like the strength in DC, their animated division has been great. And, obviously the Dark Knight trilogy was amazing. And, maybe they need to focus more on just one-off things and not an extended universe or expanded universe or, maybe that's not their game. Marvel has a huge head start and they've figured this thing out, and it works and they have a formula. And sometimes it is a little too formulaic. And that, I think, that's the issue with Marvel, that it becomes, tonally and visually, often it looks the same. And then you have like things that stand out like Ragnarok and hopefully Black Panther. But maybe DC's thing is, let's just make these one off. We'll make a solid movie and not deal with all the, how does this connect to that and that connect? Just make some good movies and forget about all the bullshit. And they've talked about it. And, you'll hear something come up every once in a while, like they have a great idea, but then they go back to, the cinematic universe and it just might not work. And so maybe they need to just, worry about themselves and not worry about what Marvel's doing right now, kind of figure out how you're going to make these characters who are all great and well known and how do you make a Justice League movie that fails? Like, it doesn't make sense, but they did it. And so they need to sit back and figure out, what the hell they need to do to correct this ship.
Well, the problem with that is they made the Avengers with mostly characters that had already developed, right? They had already developed Cap. They'd already developed Iron Man. Hulk had been kind of developed, but everybody knows you just need Hulk to smash. The main characters in the Avengers had already been developed in their own movies. The problem with Justice League is they only tried to develop three, right? Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. And of those three, the only one that had a decent movie was Wonder Woman. Superman's movie sucked. Batman versus Superman sucked. They didn't get a Batman movie with Affleck playing Batman. So, you're going back to the Dark Knight trilogy. It really leads into, you don't have the building blocks that Marvel had to build their ensemble movies. It's a problem that they're building is that they don't know how to do the one-off. They don't know how to build a movie except for Wonder Woman. And they got to look at what they did there. And what they did in Wonder Woman is almost completely mock Captain America, the First Avenger. It's not that it's a bad thing, but they kind of went to the same timeline and everything else. The only difference is Captain America isn't a god and immortal, right? He got frozen. That's why he was still the same age when he came out later. Where Diana Prince just doesn't age. That's the age she is. They're both great characters. I actually truthfully like the Wonder Woman movie more, except for the bad guys, than the Captain America movie, because I thought the Red Skull in the very first Captain America movie was pretty poorly done. That being said, everything else, it just all builds together. But they need to learn to build the individual characters first, and they don't have strong enough individual characters, with the exception of Wonder Woman, to make this happen. They need to figure out how to go back and make Superman movies like Christopher Reeve Superman movies, where they're more fun to watch. That's the problem, is they're making them dark and gritty, and they don't have to be dark and gritty, especially not with Superman.
They did have those three movies to fall back on. I think the bigger issue is that you don't rely on Zack Snyder for a cinematic universe that relies on character development, and I think that's also a large part of the problem, is relying on Zack Snyder, and then, Joss Whedon did what he could to kind of punch up a little bit of Justice League, which is fine. But yeah, it's just, I think they need somebody at the head that, a Kevin Feige, of sorts, that can correct, figure out what the hell, you know, where this is going and put it together. And you're right. Like, let's focus on the one-off characters and one-off movies and then bring this together. But I think they were, they're a few years behind Marvel and they're trying to play catch up. And that's, you know, that shouldn't be the goal right now. The goal right now is just make some good movies and get us interested in the character.
What they lack is continuity. Okay. I don't care if you would have had to change the name from Warner Brothers to Bale Brothers, but you needed to bring Christian Bale back as Batman, no matter what it took financially. If you would have had that, they would have been in a lot better position than they are right now. Because now we reintroduce Batman and we give it to Ben Affleck, and a lot of the fans weren't really crazy about that. He does two movies. They're financially successful, but not critically successful. And he throws his hands up and starts backing away. And now he doesn't want to be a part of it. They gave him full control. And, oh, now I don't want to direct. Now I don't want to be Batman anymore. The guy has stated he no longer wants to be Batman, but you're going to put him in two more fucking movies before you let him turn in the cape and walk off. All right, you don't want to be Batman anymore. I'll cast Ryan George because he does. And he'll stay here for 80 movies if need be. It's continuity. If they would have kept Christian Bale as Batman, you had one solid building block to build on to go forward. They tried to run before they could walk, and they got stung. They really did. Another thing they could have done is everybody loves the kid playing Flash over on Channel 11. You didn't need to introduce Ezra Miller as the Flash. You could have brought that kid in. You could have got him for a song because he gets to be in a movie. And there you go. Now you have another building block and you start building towards continuity because you know they're going to fucking introduce Green Arrow at some point, and it's not going to be Stephen Amell. And everybody loves that guy. He's Green Arrow. This is where you drop the ball. It's all about continuity to me. But before Affleck goes to the store and buys a pack of smokes and never comes back again like a deadbeat dad, should they give him two more movies, IG, before they recast the part?
No. No, don't give him two more movies. He wants out. Is he really going to put into this what it deserves? If we really want good DC movies, are you going to give that to somebody that doesn't want to be there? I don't even want somebody to be at my job that doesn't want to be there, let alone be one of my primary sources of entertainment. You know, it's like listening to a musician that has literally given up and is just there doing his same old hits for the $12 he's going to get at the end of the night. Nobody wants to see that anymore. You know, Affleck has proven to be a good actor. I don't know if I'd go far enough to say great, but he's good. He's done some decent things in his career. If he dedicated himself to this, could he do really well in the role? Sure he could. But he's already signed himself off of it. So, and you could literally tell that. Watching him in Batman versus Superman, he wasn't in it. Watching him in Justice League, he was even less in it. He didn't care that much about it. I mean, he was like telegraphing his lines in. It was sad to watch. And I am a DC fan. I'm probably more of a Marvel fan, but I love the DC fan. I mean, who didn't grow up as a kid in our ages reading Superman comics and watching Flash things and watching Super Friends growing up? That's all DC characters. That's what we did. So yeah, I would not in a million years give him two more movies.
So I wouldn't give him two movies. Agreed. I do think he was good in Batman versus Superman. I actually like the movie. I've talked about it before. I know it has many, many faults, but I do like the things it got right. I think I really, really enjoyed, but I think he was completely checked out in Justice League. But I think the more, you know, to what you said, like, Cynic, the continuity is really important. Now, I don't think that Bale should have been cast. I love Bale's Batman, but that world is different from this world. So I wouldn't want to see Superman in that world. But this is a situation where DC kind of dropped the ball, is that the storyline they chose for Batman Superman, you know, is largely based on the Dark Knight Returns storyline, which by its nature introduces an old Batman. So you have to introduce now Affleck as a Batman who we have no idea about. We don't know anything about the character. We don't learn much about his backstory. All we know is that he likes to kill people and he goes completely against everything Batman, you know, which is jarring. So we have no reference point for that character. So that story in itself would have been a better one-off story. But to kind of introduce, that was our introduction to a Batman who's supposed to be part of the cinematic universe. You know, that's really where it's problematic. So it's almost like you do need a couple of movies of just, we needed a couple of movies of just Batman to learn who he is, who's this version of Batman, and what's his motivation and what's happened to him and why is he there?
And at least one anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And instead, what we get is just this crazed maniac who's not the Batman we know, and we have no context for it. Because even the Dark Knight Returns, that strays a lot from its quote source material. So yeah, I think continuity is important, but it's just like it's not insulting the intelligence of your viewers, which questionable given the antics with trying to bring down reviews, but it's just, I think you have to start from scratch and introduce us to characters, make us care about them, and then you can do the big, Justice League movie and the big crossover event.
Ryan, if I put you at the head of Warner Brothers right now, if I let you take over the DC department, you're Kevin Feige of DC, how do you write the ship at this point?
I think you kind of have to start from scratch and reboot this stuff. And again, you've got tons of so here's the thing, there is such great source material to draw from that I would focus on these characters and on interesting stories and not worry so much about a cinematic universe. Let it come. If you want to do, let's say you want to take like Hush, or you want to take The Dark Knight Returns, you want to take an interesting storyline and make, a trilogy out of it, sure, do that. But I wouldn't worry too much about connecting these characters. Let's get some good movies. Let's get some good, a good trilogy of Batman movies or Superman movies that follow some interesting storylines that haven't been put on the screen. We don't need another Batman origin story or another Superman origin story. Let's just get some good stories out there. They got it right with the animated universe. So why can't they kind of bring that idea to the cinematic? So I think that would be my approach, is let's tell some great, like, for example, let's say you got a great actor who would love to play Batman, but they don't want to sign up for 8 movies. Well, great. Sign you up for a one-off and we make a great movie. Like, I would just focus on, let's make some great movies and deal with the whole extended cinematic universe later.
The easy answer is we'll wait about 6 months and DC will buy Disney will buy Warner Brothers anyway, and it'll all be fine. It'll get fixed that way.
No, oh, God.
IG, in huge breaking news, Disney buys Fox, returning the Fantastic Four, Deadpool, and the X-Men back to the Marvel Universe. Which group would you like to see them take advantage of and use first?
Oh, X-Men, by all stretches of the imagination. X-Men. I want to see Wolverine in Infinity War. I doubt it's going to happen, but Hugh Jackman said he would come back if he got to be in an Avengers movie. So they got their door. You know what? It hasn't come out yet. You could still shoehorn him in there somewhere, even if he's just running through hacking somebody with his claws and there he goes. That would be enough for me to just squeal like a little girl and I would be just fine. But X-Men, I think, is something, because of, if you've read a lot of the comic books, even just Marvel in general, X-Men characters show up everywhere. They're all over the place. So you get Cyclops showing up places, Angel showing up places, everybody. They're just all over. So it works literally in any movie if you want to throw an X-Men in there. And they were doing it in Deadpool. It worked. It worked great. I mean, who before Deadpool, unless you're a giant comic nerd, had heard of Negasonic Teenage Warhead, right? Nobody. Who didn't love that character? She was awesome. And especially his reaction to her. Whoa, can we trade names? I loved it. And you can do that all over the MCU. And X-Men is the strongest thing with that. Now, following that would probably have to be the Fantastic Four. And that's because I want to see in my lifetime a decent Fantastic Four movie, because they have all been garbage thus far. And I'm hoping that if Disney's got a chance to do something with this, they're going to put together a decent movie. I mean, obviously, we can't have the original Human Torch because he's playing Cap now, but that's okay. We can get a new Human Torch.
Original Human Torch is Cap. The other one is Killmonger, right? So, what's his name? What's Michael B. Jordan's name? And
I think it is Killmonger, isn't it?
It's Killmonger.
Yeah, I think it's Killmonger.
So, yeah, we need a third Human Torch.
That's fine, because either of those incarnations of Human Torch, although, I did like both incarnations of Human Torch, the ensemble as a whole were pretty weak. And I think that Disney has shown the ability to take even poor characters and make movies that are awesome. So when you take Fantastic Four, which was a flagship of Marvel for a long time, I think you've got enough material to make an awesome movie. And I could see that coming too. They're not the flagship. That will always be the X-Men. And the fact that they're in with the rest of the MCU now just makes me glee, just happy, because I think they can get some good stuff out of it.
They own Marvel. They own Star Wars. Now they own The Simpsons. But when do we get to the point where Disney owns everything? I mean, does it worry you a little bit that they're becoming just a complete monopoly in entertainment?
It does, to an extent. On one hand, I'm okay with, like, you know, look, the X-Men are part of Marvel, so they kind of should be, you know, all under the same umbrella. But it is a little worrisome, only because, you know, for now, Disney's doing a pretty great job with everything. I think they've done a great job with Star Wars so far. They've done a great job with the MCU. So, you know, in the right hands, they're doing great. But I think it stifles some of the competition. It, you know, leaves fewer options for actors and directors. And, you know, you'd like to see people out there taking chances. And I think while Disney has done some great work, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, would Deadpool have been made under the Disney umbrella? And no. And obviously it's a force. And so I think they'll have to continue making Deadpool movies. But, you know, I'd like to see them not buy any other major properties right now. I think they're getting a little too powerful. They have owning a little too much, and it's a little scary about, you know, what happens 10, 15 years down the road.
And that's a good point, IG, because they do kind of control entertainment in general at this point. But over the last couple of years, we've gotten Logan and we've gotten Deadpool, and they were hits mostly because of their rated R content and their great storytelling. Does Disney's family first image worry you that this new genre of adult superhero may go away?
Well, Disney's always had arms of things that weren't necessarily family friendly, right? You see Disney as a whole and it's all family friendly stuff. You see ABC and ESPN and all that stuff is still built around family friendly, but they have arms that a lot of people don't necessarily realize are Disney, that are movie production studios that are putting out the R-rated stuff and the little more risque stuff. And they have some independent distributed chains that are also Disney owned, but allowed to kind of run. So they aren't the powerhouse that won't let you do anything creative that everyone puts them out to be. But everyone thinks that because of the amount of stuff that comes from core Disney. And that would be all the Marvel, Star Wars, actual Disney and Pixar things. There's so much that comes from the core that you don't see the outer rings of stuff. And there is quite a bit that comes from Disney-owned entities that not everybody sees as Disney. They are still Disney, but they've for years, I mean, put out things that are R-rated and other things. They just don't have the Disney name on it unless you watch really closely in the end credits.
Post Black Panther, we get Avengers Infinity War, which is the whole team together and seeming that they gambled big because they spent $500 million per the next two films. Do you think that their gamble will pay off and they'll break all Marvel records?
It looks pretty good. I don't know if it'll break all records. You just wonder, like, do we run into some kind of superhero fatigue? Because, you know, even just this next few months is going to be, you know, you got Black Panther, you have Infinity War, you have Deadpool, you have Aquaman. Ant-Man. Yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on. Han Solo, we got so much stuff going on. I don't think it'll break all the records. I think it will do great. I think it will do awesome numbers. I'm excited about it. I would say it's probably my third or fourth most anticipated movie of the year, but it looks really good. And I'm excited to have, but you know, I'm a little skeptical because, you know, you do have the entire gang together. Like, how do you tell a real strong, cohesive story when you've got to, you know, every other second, you know, you're going to be introducing another character or somebody's got to say something or quip about something. It just seems like it's a lot. And I have confidence in the Russo brothers to get it right, but a little skeptical about it. But yeah, I think it's going to do perfectly fine. Disney will be happy with the numbers, but I don't think it'll break all the records.
I think if they don't make it too long, That's where I'm at. Like, part of the one of the things that they did in The Last Jedi that was a downfall was that it was too long. It doesn't need to be 2.5 hours long. 2 hours is kind of the most you can go with a superhero movie before you start to lose audience members. Even if it's jam-packed start to finish with humor and action and all those things intertwined the way that Marvel does it, 2 hours is the sweet spot. You know, maybe 2 hours and 10 minutes, but you go 2:30 plus, you're going to lose people. And then that's where I think that you won't get the repeat viewers. Yeah, I had a great time watching it, but I'm not going to throw another 3 hours away because you got to include all of the time to get in, all of the trailers that they shot. That's a long time to give up to go see a movie. And any other movie of that length, except for Star Wars, I haven't gone to the theater to see multiple times. So I think it could. I haven't seen any runtime things on it yet. It could break all records if they keep it fun, if they keep it moving. We can't have any of the lulls that have happened in some of the other movies. Some of the other Marvel movies have had some lulls in them, and it's been okay because the rest of it has been so great. This one, if they want to break the records, it needs to be moving all the time.
Well, over the last few weeks, IG, we've had a lot of big trailers drop, one of them being Deadpool 2, which was really focused on Cable because they're trying to introduce him into that world. Do you think that Deadpool 2 could possibly match Deadpool 1 as far as financial return?
Yes, and here's why, is because Deadpool 1 gained a huge following in the box office, got even a future when it came to digital and DVD, right? Because a lot of people were not willing to go see it in the box office because of its rating and everything else. But once I got a chance to watch it and see how great it was, how good Ryan Reynolds was in this role, they're in love with it. And so moving forward, I think that sells them into actually heading out, buying a ticket and seeing it in the theater. So I think it will easily reach and eclipse the first Deadpool movie.
Ryan, we also got the Venom teaser. We won't call it a full trailer because it really wasn't. However, they showed a lot of Tom Hardy, but no Venom. Do you think that was a mistake?
I don't think it was a mistake, but I get why people are upset. You know, because it's a Venom movie. We don't, so for a trailer, you kind of have to give us something, give us a story, give us some of the story beats, give us some of the visuals, give us Venom, give us something. And instead, we just got Tom Hardy. And look, I'm sold on Tom Hardy. He's one of my favorite actors. I'll watch, at this stage, I'll watch anything he's in. So, with this being, kind of the state of trailers is kind of silly anyway. You know, you get like the teaser before the teaser, and then you get the teaser, and then you get the full trailer, just kind of ridiculous. So kind of given the state of how we deal with trailers, I'm okay with that one. I'm sure we'll get a better look at Venom. I'm sure we'll get some more information on the story and where they intend on going with it. So I was fine with it, but I understand why some people were kind of frustrated and upset with it. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, it really didn't show much of anything. So it's a little hard to get excited about it beyond like, oh, look, there's Tom Hardy, but we knew he was going to be in it. So yeah, I'm good with it, but yeah, I can understand being upset or frustrated.
IG, do you think that Sony can get this one right? Do you think they can do one without Marvel holding their hands? I mean, will it be a success without Spider-Man? Will it be a success without Marvel helping them out? And if it is a success, do we all lose in the process because now they snatch Spider-Man back? Maybe he's not in the MCU anymore after the next movie?
You know, I don't know. Without seeing a glimpse of Venom, I don't know what path they're headed down. I'm hoping that they do well because I think Venom deserves it. Venom is an awesome character, and he's done a lot of things in Marvel over the years. And to have it fail would be worse than what they did to Venom already in Spider-Man 3. I'm hoping that they do well. I think that it won't necessarily pull Spider-Man back because Sony is literally reaping the benefits of the MCU without having to be full time in the MCU. So Sony is got the win-win going on here. Yeah, have they paid a little bit of money to Marvel and Disney? Sure they have, but they're getting all of the benefits from it, and it's building their brand that much stronger. And I think maybe they learned some lessons from the work with Spider-Man to hopefully make a better Venom movie. I'm excited for it, but at this point, I'm cautiously optimistic because I haven't seen enough. There wasn't enough in that trailer to get me as amped up as I would like to be. It's not like the teaser trailer we got for Solo that has me just absolutely peeing my pants over it.
Well, and that's my last and final question. I mean, during the Super Bowl and then the day after, we finally got the Solo character. I mean, there's a lot of negative chatter around the movie, such as rewrites, director changes midstream, even an acting coach being brought in for the main character. Can Lucasfilms deliver good, if not great, origin film, I mean, to start off this universe for one of their most beloved characters?
Yeah, I think so. I think they can. I think they can. They've shown the ability to do one-off things and do it successfully. I still love Rogue One, and I recognize the problems in Rogue One, but that doesn't mean it's not great. And guess what? They did a lot of reshoots in Rogue One, too. And guess what? I'm pretty sure they have acting coaches on a lot of these movies with a lot of less than stellar actors. So it's just one of those things that it doesn't hurt anything to do some of those things. And did it need rewrites? Probably. It was probably headed down the wrong path, which is why they changed before they got to the end. And that's okay. It's not the only movie that's had a different director show up in the middle of it to turn out an actually good movie. It has happened in the past before, ladies and gentlemen, and it's probably going to happen again here. Because that actual trailer, the full one that showed up on the day after the Super Bowl, I am excited. It looks good to me. I'm pretty happy. And the only thing that I didn't fully enjoy about it is that I wanted Lando to do something other than stand there. You know, I mean, I know he kind of flew the ship a little bit and threw his deuces sign up and everything, and that was great, but I wanted him to speak. I wanted to hear him pull out the smooth speech pattern from Billy Dee Williams. It would have been just great. I mean, I'm hoping that some of the characters that are known from other places at least try and kind of emulate the source material. So I don't know. I'm fully excited for Solo, and I think it should be great. And I'm hoping that we also get the beginning of Han and Chewie's relationship, that Chewie's not just there.
I haven't been excited about this movie since it was announced. And the trailer didn't do a lot to ignite any excitement in me. I think the problem is that we're going to get a lot of stories that we've either, you know, either read in books or kind of are part of canon, which I don't know that I want to see. I want to see the Kessel Run? Do I want to see Han and, you know, Chewie be, you know, see Han and kind of rescue Chewie and Chewie, you know, the life debt? Like, I don't know that I care to see that. I want to see an interesting story. I want to see something fun, and I want to see something new. But beyond that, the trailer was not bad. It was better than I expected, and maybe a little kind of, if I was like, you know, a 3 on a level of excitement, it maybe brought me up to about a 5. But I think the problem is I'm just not sold on what's his name, Alden Ehrenreich?
Something
is
like that
the actor? Yeah, I'm not sold. Like, I just doesn't work for me. And, you know, I don't need him to try to emulate Harrison Ford. You know, I want him to bring his own thing to the character, but it just, just not sold. And so, you know, no matter everything, all the side characters are great. You got Emilia Clarke and Woody Harrelson and Thandie Newton, you know,
I don't want Alden Ehrenreich to emulate Harrison Ford, but I do kind of want Childish Gambino, what's his name? I want him to emulate Billy Dee Williams. So
yes, Donald Glover. Yeah, I totally, you're absolutely right. That's a great point. But you know, the problem is he doesn't have the charisma, and something's missing. So, you know, at the end of the day, you could have all the parts together that work, but if Han Solo doesn't work, that movie doesn't work. And so that's my concern, is that it looks good. It looks pretty. It looks, you know, like cinematography so far looks pretty good. And, you know, I like Ron Howard, and I think that he'll be able to take whatever pieces, you know, he got and whatever new stuff he didn't make an adequate movie. But I'm just, you know, again, if Han Solo doesn't work, then this movie can't work.
Once again, it's continuity. I think we need to sit down with these directors, and rather than grab style over substance and grab the hottest young directors, figure out whether they're on the same page as Lucasfilms from the beginning, so we don't need to change midstream. Ron Howard is a reliable entity, and I have faith that he's going to turn out a good movie. I don't think he'd put his name on something bad, and I think that if he didn't think he could do it, he would have never accepted the project. I have faith in Lucasfilms, not including the prequels. I think that the movies are going to turn out well, and for the people complaining about the actor, listen, we didn't throw away Spider-Man, even though there's been 27 of them. We didn't throw away Batman, even though there's been 54 of them. these actors, Harrison Ford is not Han Solo. Han Solo is a character, and characters tend to be recasts. And do I want to see Han Solo go away forever because Harrison Ford is now an old guy? I don't. I mean, I was happy to hear that he was involved even a little bit in the movie and giving them some sort of a context to the character, what he thought about Han Solo. I think the movie's going to be fantastic. If you don't like it, if you don't like the trailers, you don't have to watch the trailers. If you don't like Star Wars, by all means, stay home. Don't watch the movies. You know, Disney doesn't need your money that bad that if you're going to do nothing but complain about something, just don't be involved. If you don't like it, if you're a Harry Potter fan, then don't watch Star Wars. If you're a Star Trek fan, nobody's forcing you to the theater. And if they are, you should call the police.
So that's our review of the things coming up in the near future and the things that have just passed. We had a great time bringing it to you this week. Next week, be prepared. The Black Panther cometh. We're going to be bringing it to you. You're going to want to come and see what we have to say about it. Good, bad, or otherwise, we're bringing it to you. That's our show, and I'm Igrahi. With me have been Cynic and Ryan. We had a great time. We love every time you listen to our show. Please keep listening, liking, subscribing, sharing it with all of your friends. Thanks again for all your support, and until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and at cynicradio.com. Available for download on iTunes.